Blog Talk Radio.
Out at foggy midfield, muddy midfield, although they've done a heck of a job getting the field ready, they just tossed the coin. To start the proceeding.
Over back looking left, looking in, he's going to go long down the left side, there he is, and it is caught, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jason Crew.
Welcome to the Nothing But Sports Show on NBS Central Radio, hosted by Jay Franchise, Yvonne Maddox, and Truex the Sports Junkie, where they give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So help us God.
What's good? What's good? What's good to everybody in Sports Talk America? It's your boy, Jay Franchise, a.k.a. ThatDude.com, a.k.a. the greatest sports analyst to ever but sports raid. Coming to you guys live with a very special exclusive interview. But first, before we get started, I would like to present my co-host, who's also on the Nothing But Sports Show and decided to join us today, my boy from the quote-unquote most dangerous city in the world, Las Vegas. What's going on, Big Mike?
Nothing much. Glad to be on here with you, Jay. I am currently live in the most dangerous city on earth, but as well, it is the entertainment capital of the world and the greatest city on earth as well. Let's get this started.
All right, man. So with that being said, man, I would like to introduce everybody to former Florida Gator standout tight end and All-American, as well as a former second-round pick of the Tennessee Titans, Ben Troop. What's going on, Ben? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing all right, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the space, man. I really, really do.
Oh, awesome, awesome, awesome. Sounds like a plan. So let's get this show rocking. So how old were you when you started playing football?
I was 7 years old. You can't play. I'm from a small town, Swainsboro, Georgia, and, football was it was really what we did, man. You ain't really have nothing else to do in a smaller country town, and my birthday is on September 1st, and that's the cutoff date. So when I actually turned 7, they actually was telling me that I had to wait another year, but they was like, my birthday is the cutoff date, so I've been playing since I was 7, and, I mean, you get to hit each other, man, so, it was a no-brainer for me.
No doubt. No doubt. So when did you start playing tight end?
It's funny. I started playing tight end when I was in high school, and when they told me I was playing tight end, I didn't even know what the position was. The reason why I say that is for my freshman year to my sophomore year, I went from like 5'10 to like 6'2 over a summer. So when they saw me, I didn't even play football my freshman year in high school, but my sophomore year, when the coaches saw me, they knew who I was, but they was like, who is this guy? They kept saying it to me, and obviously, I had to be explained, like, being, a tight end, put his hand on the ground, different. I'm like, what? Because I had never played. It wasn't a glamour position way back in, 99, 2000, So I wasn't too keen on it. But I was like, I get to catch the ball? They was like, yeah. So I was like, okay, so it made sense.
Pretty much back then, it was kind of like an offensive lineman that couldn't catch the ball because, they ran the ball a lot back then, right, a lot more than now. Now the tight end lines up as a receiver a lot. So it's a little different, but I definitely hear what you're saying about being a little iffy on the tight end at first. But going to my first question, when people search your name on Google, the first thing that pops up is your hurdle against Ole Miss, and there's some highlights of that. You hurdle that one dude, and then you pretty much truck your way into the end zone. Is that your favorite moment of your college career, or does something else pop up?
I mean, that's one of my favorite moments, man. I think I get too much credit when you look at that whole play. As soon as I jump over the guy, man, the guy hits me in my back, and it looks like I just throw him off. But I mean, which my teammates would appreciate, O.J. Small and Kelvin Kite. You know, if they was listening right now, they'll say, make sure I give them their props. But it was some good blocking on that play. And, man, you know what? I ain't going to lie to you. When you're on the field and you're that close to the end zone, I was trying to get in the end zone by any means necessary because I get a break. I mean, it looks like I'm not tired out there, but I'm exhausted. So I'm like, man, it's hot out here. I need to get in the end zone. But, you know, that's one of my favorite plays. My favorite play when I was in college, man, was we was playing Auburn my junior year. And my sophomore year, we was ranked number one in the country. We go down to Auburn Stadium. They beat us by a field goal. So the same scenario is setting up. And, man, I don't know if I've ever been involved in a blocked field goal before, but 90,000 people was quiet. And we, Bobby McCray, who ended up, I think he was, if you remember, he's the guy that played for the Saints. That when you look at Kurt Warner, when you see Kurt Warner get leveled by number 93, that's him. He blocked the field goal. Yeah. So that was my favorite moment, man. Because I've never heard 90,000 people, like, be quiet. Like it's like don't distract them, but because I mean, you know, I appreciate every accolade I've ever received, but I mean I've never been a, you know, individual type guy when it came to a team sport. I always say, man, I didn't play golf, I ain't play tennis. I played a sport that, thank God, it wasn't my talent out there alone, because I get to share my talent on the field with 10 other guys. But the Ole Miss play was crazy. I mean, I take nothing from it, but I jumped over a guy my junior year in the Outback Bowl, and the reporter walking up here asked me, Ben, are you going to leave early? I'm like, what? Am I going to leave early for a jump over? No, that's not going to happen, man. I got to do more than that. I got to show the world a little more than that.
Yeah. I definitely respected that.
All right, so after a very illustrious high school career where you were named an All-American, you chose the University of Florida. So why did you choose the University of Florida and go down and play down in Gainesville for legendary coach Steve Spurrier?
Man, for three reasons. One, I mean, I get to leave the state. I mean, I'm like most guys, man. If it wasn't for college, I wouldn't have left Georgia. I was in Augusta, Georgia at the time. You know, and I get a chance to, you know, play for, you know, number two. Steve Spurrier came to my, was sitting in my living room. And mind you, he didn't say a word. I mean, the assistant coach is talking to me. And they saying all this different stuff, and at the end, Steve Spurrier was like, "Well, Ben, are you gonna be with us?" And I'm like, "Yes, sir. I'm not gonna tell you. No, you're Steve Spurrier. Of course, I'm gonna come to Florida." And obviously, my faith is is everything to me, man. And my mother has always been a praying woman, has always been a Christian, and she prayed about it. And you know, and she said, God told her, I'm going to Florida. I ain't gonna go against God. Definitely not gonna go against my mom's. And I'm like, well, can I still go on my official visit? She was like, are they free? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, you can do that, but you're going to Florida. So I think I know I made the best decision possible, but, you know, I don't look back on it at all, man. I mean, when I first got to college, I can say this, I didn't even know what All-American was. So when people say, you was All-American, I didn't know what that was back then. You know, like, wow. Are you All-American prep star? I was a pure football player. The only reason why I wore gloves is because they gave them to me. Like, I didn't even know what statting up was. And I like, why guys got, like, tape on their, you know, on their cleats? I didn't know.
Wow.
I was just a pure. So when people were saying all these different things, man, my biggest accomplishment in high school was I told my coach, I said, Coach, listen, man, I know, you know, because our team was bad, but I said, I appreciate being invited to the East-West Shrine Bowl, the North-South Bowl. I want to play in the Georgia-Florida High School All-Star Game. Now, we talking, that's like shooting for the moon. And I was an ROTC, I remember it. I got a call. My coach came and got me out of the classroom. He said, you know, pick up the phone. And it was a guy from the Georgia-Florida High School All-Star Game. I about dropped the phone. I couldn't believe that I get to represent my state against the best in the state of Florida. And, you know, man, you know, my life is a dream, man. I don't try to make it seem as if it was something I did, but, hey, man, football is one thing, but when you get to represent your state, oh, man, it don't get better.
That's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing right there. That's your home. That's your home pretty much. So I definitely hear you with that. So I'm 18 years old, and I've been a Redis fan all my life, and all it's been is mediocrity. Finally, it seems like we're turning the corner. But pretty much all my life, I've been a little down on my team every year. You played with them in 2008. Can you, kind of elaborate on what the atmosphere was like. You know, who do you remember from there? Did you ever talk to Al Davis? Jen McFadden got drafted that year. So what can you tell me about the Raiders from that year?
Well, let me give a big shout out to my wife and her family. My wife is from Milpitas High. You know, she's from Milpitas, so she's from the Bay Area, big time Raider fan. I mean, you know, and I didn't know my wife when I was with the Raiders. She would have made life a lot better, but I met her after. But when I was with the Raiders, look, man, you know, listen, I played for the Titans and I loved it. I played for the Tampa Bay Bucks and I loved it. People say who the number one fans in the NFL is, and I know people don't get bigger than the Raiders. And I'm gonna tell you why. We go to Miami. I don't know how long, it was talking about like 6.5-7 hour flight. We get off the plane and there's so many people in the airport. It looks like we still in Oakland. I mean, these people love the Raiders, and it's like, how I ended up on the Raiders, I got cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I just played the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday afternoon. I go watch the film on Monday. Tuesday, my day off, I'm driving around running errands. My brother say, hey, man, you got released by the Bucs? I'm like, nah. He's like, yes, you did, because your name on the bottom line. I ain't got no call or nothing. So I'm thinking,
wow.
What? This is Tuesday. Mike Dominic, who was end up being the general manager, he was a scout. He said, Ben, listen, we got a bunch of teams looking at you. I fly out to Atlanta on Wednesday. I try out on Thursday. They said, Ben, we're not gonna sign the tight end. I fly out to Atlanta on Thursday. I get to Oakland Friday morning. I try out Friday. I try out like Friday around like 10 o'clock. I get signed by 10:30. I'm flying to Buffalo. I'm not gonna play. And the biggest thing about that is Lane Kiffin was the head coach. I'm working out. I look up. Al Davis gives me a thumbs up. He points at me. Like they're like, Ben, look at Al. He looks at me. He points at me. He gives me a thumbs up. I got to go in his office. I got to shake this man's hand and just talk life. I come in his office. He want to know about me and my family. I got to meet Al Davis, man. And to me,
that's awesome.
Al Davis, Trump. He's bigger than football, but. I love playing for the Raiders, man. And listen, I was on injured reserve. I never stepped out in the field with the Raiders, but you couldn't tell, man. These fans are like, they're like nothing I ever seen. They're taking nothing away from Pittsburgh and Green Bay and Seattle or whatever. But the best fans, the best uniforms, obviously, were silver and black. But the best fans,
yep.
Oakland Raiders, man. It was a blessing, man, because I got to meet Al Davis, man. When they did the collective bargaining agreement we got now, Al Davis is the only one that said no. He did not afraid. He was never afraid to be who he was, so. I appreciate that about it.
I love that. I love to hear that. I always think of the Raiders as the best fans, Raider Nation all day. And we've stuck with that team through it all, through the Super Bowls. And with me, we've stuck through it for all these bad years. So I love to hear that you're saying we're the best fans in the NFL because we all believe it too.
Y'all on your way back, man. Y'all on your way back. I believe it.
Okay. So you had the opportunity to play in not only for Steve Spurrier, but also Ron Zook. Tell me or describe your experience with both coaches, and who did you feel like was the better coach for you?
Steve Spurrier was the best coach I needed at the time. He was a legend, and he expected nothing but the best from you. He never demanded perfection, but he expected you to do your job. It's funny. I only lost 5 games in 2 years with Steve Spurrier. I went 20-5 in 2 years, or 22 or something in 5 in 2 years. And the thing about it, he never talked about winning. Like, he never, ever, he would always say, if we don't play the way we capable of playing, this other team going to beat us. And every time we lost, we didn't play up to par. Whereas Ron Zook, all he talked about was winning. And we didn't have as much success, but I would not be the player I am. I would not have become the player I was without Ron Zook because I didn't appreciate what I had. I was one of those guys that got by off talent alone. Like, I was a little more talented than the average guy, so I can get over on my talent. And Ron Zook was the first person to tell me, I'm going to make you work. I'm not going to let you just get by. And Ron Zook told me, he said to me, it's funny, going into my senior year, we had our spring game, and a bunch of guys got in a bunch of fights that night, and a bunch of guys got locked up. But I wasn't one to, I ain't getting no fights, but I was there. And he called me to his office, and he said, why you let your teammates get locked up? And I said, Coach, I'm only one person or whatever. I mean, what can I do? This dude looked at me and said, Martin Luther King Jr. said he got a dream, and the whole world believed him. He said, one man said he got it and the whole world believed it. He said, you realize when he did his march on Washington, they didn't have Twitter and Facebook, and everybody showed up at the same at the right time to hear this man speak. He said, you making excuses because of what you didn't do. He said, so this is what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to treat my best player like my worst player, and I'm going to get my whole team to follow suit. And that's how my senior year, he said, I consider you my best player, but I ain't going to treat you like my best. I'm going to treat you like my worst because I say, he said, if the others, if your teammates see how I treat you, they ain't going to, they going to, you know, they're going to get right. And to me, if I don't meet this dude, I don't get drafted where I get drafted. I really, really don't. I mean, my quarterback was Chris Leak. He was 18 years old. I was 21 years old. Up until that point, Chris Leak's biggest decision was, am I going to wear a cummerbund or a bow tie for the prom? And now he's a starting quarterback. So, and we went on a run that year. But, I mean, I appreciate Steve Spurrier was showing me, you know, to just go out and prepare. But I appreciate Ron Zook for really being a jerk to me, man, because I needed it. Like, I had all the coach, hey, Ben, you this and you that. Ron Zook would look at me and say, that ain't good enough, no matter what I did. And because of it, when I got to the league, man, I used to have coaches tell me, I ain't never seen a player prepare like you. And I'm like, man, you don't know what I come from, man. I come from a dude who told me, Ron Zook told me, sleep is a waste of time. The only reason why you do it is because your body needs it. That's the kind of dude he was. You know, like, you know, he's like, nothing done when you sleep. So, but I don't know, man. I mean, Ron Zook gave me an opportunity to showcase my talent. Steve Spurrier gave me a chance to be around a legend. I mean, Steve Spurrier's a living legend. And, you know, I just thank God for both sides of it because, you know, like I said, if I would have had Spurrier for 4 years, I would have won a lot of games. And I would have caught 10 passes, if that. So I appreciate both of them.
That's awesome. Two awesome coaches. So sticking with the college football, the national championships is on Monday, Clemson, Alabama. Who do you have winning it all? Who or what is your X factor for each team?
I say this, Alabama's probably going to win the game. But I believe Clemson winning the game is better for college football because it makes it even. The reason why the college playoff was set up so that teams like Clemson would actually have a shot at making it. Because the BCS, they would have never made it in. So I say that and say my X factor for Clemson is Watson. I've never seen a guy that young, that poised, take control of an offense the way he does. And when it comes to Alabama, I can't remember what the young receiver name is, the freshman.
I
can't remember. I think he's
the
X factor. And the reason why I say is, when you got a freshman who's looked upon to be the number one receiver, he can take a game over, man. This dude, I mean, and, you know, Alabama has that defense, and I know Shaq Thompson over there on Clemson, but I think it's going to be Watson, you know, on that offense. And you know, because it's going to come down to who can make a play on offense. Because both defenses are stout. I mean, obviously Clemson defense isn't better than Alabama's. But I just think that whenever Alabama loses, it changes the whole landscape of college football because it shows college football that they can be beat. But until you dethrone these guys, they are the creme de la creme. It's Alabama and everybody else. It's like they in the league of their own because even when you change the rules, they still on the top two teams. No matter what you do, they find their way to be in the top. And, you know, I would love to see Dabo Sweeney and those guys win it because, like I say, you know, whenever you're going up against a juggernaut like the Alabama Crimson Tide, you're scared to death. But when you find a way to beat them, that's the only reason why guys go to other schools. Watson will be a reason why guys will choose Clemson over Alabama. Whereas you have what they call them gray shirts. You got guys that's willing to go to Alabama who ain't even, they ain't even on a scholarship yet, just the way they turn. So it's probably going to be Alabama, though. I think it's definitely going to be those guys. I mean, Nick Saban, man, he's a mastermind of getting his team ready to go.
Without a doubt. And the receiver that you were thinking of is Calvin Ridley. That's the guy.
He gave us some fits in the SEC championship game, and he was going up against you know, some pretty good DDs. But the young man is very, very polished to be a true freshman.
Yeah, he is very nice.
Okay. So let's talk about the NFL draft for a second. So you were drafted in the second round by the Tennessee Titans. Tell me about, you know, from the time, you know, after your last game in college football to the time you got drafted, tell me about that whole process. Like, what was it like, you know, going through the combines, you know, what scouts were telling you, as well as, like, you know, sitting and waiting for your name to be called?
You know what, I compare the process of going through the draft is like being a beautiful woman in a room full of men. Like you're the best looking chick in there. I'm not saying I'm a woman. I'm saying, let me switch it this way. Just say.
No. It was a good analogy.
You're a beautiful woman. You're a beautiful woman in a room full of men. Because, listen, you ain't going to hear too much. The only negativity you're going to hear is going to come from the media. It's not going to come from coaches. It's not going to come from these organizations, these general managers. And it's like everybody's telling you how good you are. And it's one of those things to where you don't even know what to believe. There isn't a player that's coming out in the draft don't think they're going to be a first-round pick. So with me, I really want to go to the combine. I got invited to the combine. You get to the combine, and it's a meat market. You literally – You do this thing where a coach, it's all the tight ends. They'll say, hey, take off everything but your undies. And I'm like, what is this? But you got to do it. And you go on a stage, and it's a light on the stage. And they'll say, well, stand up on the stage. They'll, you know, like Ben Troop, you know, he like, you know, 6'5", 260 pounds. You know, they'll say, put your arms out, turn around. They really want to see how your body looks. I mean, I've never seen nothing like it. But they were like, tell them to turn to the side. But the thing is, the coaches are in the audience, and it's dark. Like, you can see images of faces, but you can't see them. And they can see you. They get your arm length and your hand size, and it's a meat market, man. It's almost like being a car on the assembly line. You go every single part of you, they're gonna make sure, that, you know. And when I got drafted, it's funny. I was in Swainsboro, Georgia, where I'm originally from. And basically, you know, when the draft came, I thought I was going to go to Tennessee. It's funny, man, I had a good agent. My agent said, Ben, you're going to go between 20 and 40. He said, you will not go below 40. I got drafted the 40th pick. He said, you won't go below 40. 40th pick came when I got drafted. And when you get drafted, you can't help but cry, man, because you think about it. This is something that you dreamed about doing and it came to the light, man. But you go through a lot, man. The combine was crazy. Working out. I worked out in New Orleans, Louisiana. Never been to Louisiana in my life. You know, then I'm turning down the wrong streets, driving down. I'm over there by where Lil Wayne and them from. I'm like, man, I'm not getting out of this car. It was crazy, man. But I mean, when you a small town kid like me from Swainsboro, Georgia, and you realize that every kid that strap on cleats want to do what you're doing, and you doing it. You representing the best players in the world, regardless how your career go. You get to do something that most guys can only fathom. They can't even, you know, it's like a dream. And it's like, I didn't even realize this. I got drafted in the second round, so it's funny. This is what the world will make you think. I'm thinking I'm a failure because I didn't go first. I'm on the plane, head to Nashville. The pilot says, head to Nashville from Atlanta. The pilot says, we got the Tennessee Titans number one draft pick of the team, Ben Troop, on this flight. This is what the pilot says. I'm like, what? Oh. I'm like, I'm not the first pick. You're like, yes, you are. And it's a blessing, man. I mean, like I say, man, I think back on it. I'm 21 years old, and most 21 years old trying to figure out life, man. I'm drafted. I'm going to Tennessee. And Jeff Fisher, man, this is my draft experience. The phone rang. I look at it. It's a 615 area code. I say, hello? He goes, is this Ben? I'm like, yes, sir. He said, this is Jeff Fisher of the Tennessee Titans. He said, you ready to be a Titan? I go, yes, sir. He goes, hold on. He get a phone to somebody else. They start getting my information. That was it. It's like nothing dramatic about it. Like, okay, we're going to draft Ben. We're going to get his information, move on to the next pick. It's like, you know, because they so used to it. But it was a blessing, though, man. I enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
Man, that's pretty dope.
So sticking with the NFL, playoffs have started. Kansas City still up on the Texans at the start of the second half, 13-0. There's three more playoff games this weekend. Let's start with the Cincinnati and the Steelers. Who you got in that game, and who's your X factor?
I actually got Pittsburgh coming out of that game. I believe they're going to try to do everything they can to overwhelm A.J. McCarron, make him make some mistakes, and I think he's been great down the stretch. But I just think that Pittsburgh is the most dangerous team in the AFC because they snuck in. They need help, and everything they need to happen for them. And my X factor for Pittsburgh is always going to be two guys, Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. I don't know what type of chemistry these guys do. I don't know if they hang out on the field. I ain't never seen it. You know, these two dudes, because when you look at Antonio Brown, I mean, a guy that small but quick, fair. I mean, he plays like he's, you know, 6'5", and he can do it all. But obviously with Cincinnati, A.J. Green. A.J. Green to me and Eifert. You got to find a way to get both of those guys the ball. I mean, if you got the force feed them, you force them. I know everybody said they're going to try to run the ball, but, hey, man, listen, when you got stallions in the stable, you let them boys out, man. You got some thoroughbreds. You got to let them out and let them run. And but I think Mike Tomlin got something up his sleeve for A.J. McCarron, and I think they're going to find a way to get a big W.
You're a smart man, smart man. I told everyone that that pass rush from the Steelers, that's definitely going to hurt A.J. McCarron. He's definitely going to be just uncomfortable. And sticking with Antonio Brown real quick, this is for the other co-host on our show. We had a conversation about this a little earlier. Is Antonio Brown the best receiver in the NFL in your
hands
mind?
Hands down. It's not even close, only because with everybody else, it's Julio is 6'3", 230, and Demaryius Thomas is 6'4", 230. You know, Antonio Brown, he got a haircut like Nino Brown. I ain't never seen a haircut like that. But Antonio Brown will walk right by you in a store, and if somebody told you that's who he was, you wouldn't believe it. You're like, that's Antonio?
Yep.
That's him. This dude right here? Like, he look like he worked for UPS. No. Yeah. That's number 84 for the Steelers. And to me, that's what Steve Smith Sr. inspired. Antonio Brown's never get a look without a Steve Smith Sr. They like, little receivers can play big on Sunday. And I'm pretty sure Antonio Brown wouldn't mind me saying that, but the man had 130-something catches. That's ridiculous to even fathom that. So, yeah, I think because he can do it all, man, any route. You know, he could play special teams. The boy would play deep. I believe he had to do play defensive back. He'll find a way to make the Pro Bowl doing that, too. The boy looked like he just can do whatever.
I totally agree. So then there's two NFC playoff games. Those are tomorrow. Seahawks and Vikings. Who do you have in that one?
I got the Seahawks. I mean, I love what Mike Zimmer has done with the Minnesota Vikings. Man, I love Teddy Bridgewater, and I believe comeback player of the year. In consideration, if he's not the man, is Adrian Peterson. But I love what Mike Zimmer is doing. But the Seattle Seahawks have found their playoff stride. They're winning games. And I think if Cam Newton is not 15-1 doing what he's doing, Russell Wilson will be my MVP. This dude, to me, every time people think he's not that good, he loses Jimmy Graham. He has no Marshawn Lynch, and he keeps balling. This man does more with less than anybody I've ever seen. And to me, it took losing those, because if he got Jimmy Graham and said, well, all I do is throw it up to Jimmy Graham, all I do is hand it off to Marshawn Lynch, he has neither one of those people. And I think the Legion of Boom, I think Cam Chancellor and the boys, I think they're going to make life real rough for Kirk Cousins.
I totally agree. With Jimmy Graham, they barely even used him, too. Like, they got him, and everyone was saying that, oh, now Russell's got that number one receiver now. But Doug Baldwin, he's been his number one receiver for since he got into the league. So with that Jimmy Graham thing, that's been a little interesting. And then the last playoff game this weekend, Packers and Redskins, who do you have?
You know what? It's crazy. I mean, I know number 12 is Aaron Rodgers for the Green Bay Packers. I don't know who that guy's been playing these last, I don't know, month or so. But it's something about Washington, man. These boys play for each other. They have this back against the wall. Don't nobody expect us to do nothing. While I think that Green Bay can definitely light up that secondary, I can see Green Bay, you know, finding a way to get DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, and that boy from Florida. Hey, man, Jordan Reed is a monster. Jordan Reed is a mismatch. He's a mismatch waiting to happen. I don't think nobody over there, you know, with Green Bay can deal with that guy. I can see Washington getting a big W and just, you know, making life a lot. You know, I know what Aaron Rodgers told the fans to relax. Well, they need to panic because I don't see them winning. I don't see them winning, getting a big win. I think Washington can get them one.
I hear you. I knew you would be liking Jordan Reed. Tight end from Florida. I mean, pretty much the same guy.
But, the guy's nice. The young man is nice. I like his game.
He is extremely a very good football player. Even if the picks don't work out, who do you have going all the way to the Super Bowl? Who's your AFC champion, NFC champion, and who do you have winning it?
Listen, I would hope to see Carolina versus versus New England. And the reason why I would look, I think Carolina will win it. Because to me, I think that's what Cam Newton wants. I think Cam Newton want to be like, I want to be on the biggest stage with the biggest star, with the, you know, with the poster child for success on that other team. Because to me, that's the only way I get my respect in this league. I got to be able to beat the best. And I would love to see the rematch now, too. I would love to see Seattle, New England part two. I don't think it'll go the same, though. But I think Cam Newton, man, because he's a Georgia boy, and I know how much the young man has been through, and I see how much progression. I would love to see Cam Newton, you know. And if he's listening, man, I want to help him write his book because it's going to be a bestseller. Because this dude's life is ridiculous. But I would love to see Cam Newton get a big dub, man. I mean, you know, them boys, they did some crazy stuff this year. When Ted Ginn Jr. is your number one receiver, you went 15-1. You the MVP of the league. You the MVP of the league.
Without a doubt.
Wow, that's interesting, man. That's an interesting way that you put it, man. I if Cam doesn't win the MVP, something's got to be wrong. So, what's the difference between the NFL and the college game, like in preparation and practices and whatnot? Like, what differences do you see in the NFL and college game?
Young men and grown men. In college, you got a bunch of young men who are extremely talented, and when you go to the NFL, you got grown men. It's like future professionals and professionals. I mean, Mike Munchak, a Hall of Famer for the Tennessee, or the Houston Oilers, the Tennessee Titans, he said something one time, man, that sums it up when it comes to college and pro. He said, college, you told what to do, and you do it till you get it right. He said, the pros, you do it until you don't know how to get it wrong. Like, that's why we do it every day. You don't even know how to get it wrong. And it's one of those things to where when I was a rookie, I got interviewed. And somebody asked me, Ben, you got a kid? You got any kids? You got a wife? I said, no, I don't got none of that. It's just me. And mind you, a veteran is listening. He let me finish my whole interview. And right when the interview was over, he said, Ben True, I don't ever want you to hear you say you ain't got this, you ain't got that. He said, that man got kids, so you got kids. That man over there got a wife, so you got a wife. He said, because what you do affects him now. Everything you do affects him. I'm like, what? Everything you do now affects somebody else. He said, in college, they could just get rid of you. Whereas the NFL, they paying you. So it's hard to get, you know, and I was like, he was really helping me understand, what it really took. Because like I say, man, I mean, college is immensely, people are immensely talented, but, man, I got Michael Strahan 1 week, Jason Taylor the next week, Junior Seau the next week. I ain't get a lot of sleep when I play in the NFL. It was rough. Because, I mean, I got to perform against guys I want their autograph. But, It's college and pro is like night and day, man. Future stars compared to, you got guys like Calvin Johnson is a creative player. 6'5", 240, can run a 4.3. That's a real person in the NFL. That's a real person that can actually do that. So, you know, college is great, but, man, the NFL, man, you literally got the best players in the world.
No doubt. After college, after NFL, it seemed like you went into broadcasting, done some stuff with ESPN. Tell our listeners how they can listen to you, what kind of show what you're on, when you're on, and tell us also how you got into it as well. How did you jump from NFL to broadcasting?
I'm not even gonna lie to you. When you guys on Blog Talk Radio, my first show I ever done, it was on Blog Talk Radio. It was an early morning show. I met this guy. Talking about Blog Talk. I don't know what Blog Talk is. You know, and I went on it, and I was doing it. I'm doing it in my living room. People thinking, I'm like, oh, Ben, you at the studio? I'm like, yeah, I'm at Studio 84. they have no idea what the thing was. It's funny. So I'm doing it. I'm doing that. And I go from that to I meet this guy named B.J. Bennett. He's actually the guy I do the, you know, I was doing the ESPN Coastal Brunswick, Georgia with. I meet him. He said, Ben, come to the, you know, I happen to be visiting my mom in Georgia, and he showed me. I'm the type of person, man, I would never ever, just because I was in the NFL doesn't mean that I'm going to disrespect what you guys do. Like, I'm trying to become a part of the business. So I'd rather learn from the ground up. I want to get my stripes on the wall. So I did a lot of cameos with them, and they ended up letting me write a blog for they went to ESPN when I first met them. They became ESPN after I met them, and it's not because of me. But I was like, man, just give me a lot of reps. I ended up going to the SEC Media Day. They asked me to come down. I did so much media that day. Met all these people, man. And it's funny, I moved to New York. I was living in Atlanta, moved to New York. And, you know, got in contact with, you know, because this is the biggest media marketing in the world. I'm thinking I'm going to do radio. I might as well do it in the biggest media marketing in the world. And, you know, obviously it's a who-you-know type world. And I met this guy named Dan Swartzman, NBC Sports Radio. And how I met him was a guy from SEC Media Days named Tom Abel. Florida had just lost to Georgia Southern. We just lost to freaking Georgia Southern. And he texted me, like, Ben, what happened? I said, man, I can't worry about that, man. I'm trying to get on with your friends. And then his friend was the guy, Dan Swartz, on NBC Sports Radio. And, you know, since then, man, I, you know, my life has, you know, really changed as far as radio goes, man, because I do, you know, I do the Newly Scrubbed show, NBC Sports Radio. I do the Tom Abel show. I do ESPN Coastal. And really, I don't, you know, and the only show that's mine is my Huddlecast with Max Starks. You know, we got the Max and Ben show with the University of Florida Huddlecast. We do that every week. And, man, I'm just taking it as it comes, man. I mean, I'm the type of guy, man, I don't want nobody to give me nothing. I'd rather show you what I'm worth. And, you know, radio is a beautiful thing, man. I always say, man, I got a face for radio, not television. So people don't got to see my face. They can just hear my voice. And I enjoy it, though, man. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Oh, man, no doubt, bro. That's pretty tight. So, Ben, are you part of, you know, can you tell us about any of your nonprofit work and volunteer work that you're currently doing or working with?
Yeah, I'm doing, it's called A Success is a Journey. And it's basically, man, like a program for young black and Hispanic youth, man. I feel as though, you know, the type of people we have in front of us is not always the best people. You know, we're trying to, and what we do within the program is, man, we really try to get these young men life skills. You know, we try to sit down with them and try to talk about things that's important to them. And in the process, you know, we use positive reinforcement and encouragement to help these young men. I mean, a lot of them have, you know, they're coming from single parent homes. They don't, and their reality doesn't necessarily reflect the reality they hope to have. And what I do is, man, I know I was able to do everything I've done and continue to do what I do because somebody helped me do it and continues to help me do it to this current day. So I'm just doing for them what was done for me, man. It's nothing. It's something to where, you know, if I can get a young man to, you know, to see himself, you know, in an aspect of being great compared to saying, listen, man, because we use a lot of different lines or different sayings. And I always tell my young men, man, I say, you're a product of your environment. You're just not a finished product. So I'm just helping you, you know, with the product that you got. And it's incredible, man. I mean, you know, you're taking a kid who feels as though he ain't never going to be nothing. And he's becoming something from that because you're getting to see himself in a different light. And I've been doing it for a while now, man, you know, and it's one of those things where, like I say, I mean, football going to fade one day. I'd rather, you know, when my life is done, I'd rather somebody say, Ben, you was the guy, man, that just helped me realize my true potential. Because, I mean, like I said, that's what somebody did for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's what pro athletes have to do. That's what they have to do to make an impact on the world. I mean, you could be a pro, you could be a star athlete, but if you're a star athlete and you do nothing for anyone else, it doesn't really mean anything. You know what I mean? If you don't give back to what was given to you, it just doesn't mean anything. And what you're doing, that's just awesome. That's just awesome.
All right, man. Hey, Ben, I definitely appreciate you coming on. Man, you did an outstanding job. I'm just so, you know, blessed and thankful that you decided to, you know, take some time out from one of the wild card NFL games to come on and do this interview with us. Do you have any shout-outs or anybody that you organization you want to shout-out real quick before we wrap this up?
No, I mean, big shout out to y'all, man. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm gonna give you and your co-host, man, all the appreciation, man. Because like I say, I mean, I hope that you know, one of my biggest things is to get people to see, you know, athletes, or pro athletes, or former athletes in a different light. I represent the other side of, I represent that human element of it. You know, I appreciate you guys, you know, for what you guys do. And like I said, when you reached out to me, man, I mean, my job is to make myself available, man. And I appreciate y'all for giving me this space. Like I say, man, I mean, football, you know, it's faded for me, man. It was a part of my life. It's not the rest of my life. And, you know, whenever these type of opportunities, just like I told you yesterday, it's not the first interview, man. It's the second and the third. So, you know, my job is to, you know, is to make a great impression. And And like I say, because I've been on here, I'm definitely going to be telling everybody, man, how I do on Twitter, I put pressure on other people. I said, listen, man, if MBS ain't hitting you up, you're a nobody right now. Because, I mean, they're the ones that's doing it big. And they have to take what I say, you know, seriously. But I mean, I admire what you guys do and, you know, definitely keep doing it. And like I say, man, I appreciate this opportunity, man. I really do.
Thank you. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely appreciate it. Hey, Mike, go ahead and get your shout-outs out before we wrap up.
No doubt. A shout out to Ben for coming on, man. I mean, thank you for Jay for telling me to come on to do this interview with Ben. It really enlightened me. I really enjoyed it. And you ever want to come on again, you know how to hit us up. You know how to contact us. And you can come on our regular show. We can do another interview. Or, like I said, you can just go on our regular show and you can act like one of the boys and just talk to us about all the football and college football that's going on in currently. So thank you for coming on again, bro.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I just want to send a special shout out to Ben. Thanks for coming on again. I want to shout out everybody, you know, and all of our NBS Central family, you know, the Sports Junkie, TrueX the Sports Junkie, Mr. Box Office, Big Malcolm, Ray. Just everybody has been rocking with us for a long time. Shout out to the military. Shout out to everybody overseas. Again, shout out to Ben. Make sure y'all go to the NBS Central app, you know, where you can listen to not only this interview, but plenty more. With that being said, you know, it's your boy Jay Franchise signing off. You know, we out. Another great NBS Central interview in the books. We out. Peace.